If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. Today, I have a very interesting guest. His name is Urs Lenhart Steiner. Urs is a music director and a conductor. He is internationally renowned as a conductor, guitarist, educator, and composer. Urs was raised in Chur, a city in Switzerland with civilization dating back as far as 3900 BC. As a child, his musical parents taught him and his nine siblings to sing on pitch, and the family sang in harmony every day. Urs showed talent early on, and as a teenager, he studied classical guitar in Zurich and Berlin. At the University of Tübingen, he took advanced conducting studies with James Weimer and Gustav Meyer, as well as participating in master classes with André Previn, Eric Leinsdorf, Leonard Bernstein, and Herbert von Karajan. Upon coming to the States, he attended and graduated from the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. In 1994, Maestro Steiner founded the orchestra that would become the Golden Gate Symphony Orchestra and Chorus. Maestro Steiner's compositions include the operas Il Secondo Settennio and Return of the Phantoms, which have been performed to critical acclaim in Switzerland and the United States. In addition to leading the Golden Gate Symphony in local and international endeavors, he is a frequent guest conductor with orchestras and ensembles in Europe, the United States, and Central America. Please help me welcome Maestro Urs Lenhart Steiner. Urs, how are you?
I'm going good. You're giving me all these accolades. You know, I feel almost a little guilty.
Not at all. Well, welcome to Whispers and Bricks. How have you been?
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I have to admit, I never met a conductor in my life.
Oh, well, it's about time.
So this is kind of new for me, you know?
Okay, good.
Yeah. As you know, the name of the podcast is Whispers and Bricks. Now, the whispers are those voices telling us what the right thing to do is and represent the good in life. The bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. And let me tell you, everybody gets hit with a brick, at a minimum, at least one brick, if not more, throughout their lifetimes. So let me start by asking you an easy question, okay? Like, at what point in life did you know that being a conductor was going to be your career path? And how did it happen?
I was already at the conservatory here in San Francisco when let's go backwards. I did conduct choruses already when I was a kid. In my teenage years, I sang in choruses, and occasionally I got to take over when the directors were not there or something like that. So I had a little bit of I already liked it then, but then at the conservatory, I was asked by my friends who, I organized all kinds of musical adventures with musicians, my colleagues, student colleagues. And I would go with the composers. They always needed somebody to conduct, and they didn't have any resources in terms of money. So that's where I started. I started to conduct all these modern pieces of friends of mine, and organized the concerts, and we had resources at the conservatory to have a hall, and everything was there, so it wasn't so complicated to make something happen. And then I was a pretty good, I made a couple of dishes which were really good, one called Soße Herdöpfel, which is basically potato sauce with sausages and a little bit of, greens in it. And I could make that in big, huge, pots, and then I could feed them, and I would have friends donate beer and wine, and that's how they got paid.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
At that point, I really decided, okay, this is something I really like, and I started to really seriously investigate that career, and started anywhere I could, you know, I was all over the place. I took any master class I could. And I did many of them. And so slowly but surely, you know, I got better and went to Aspen, Colorado a couple of years and for the Aspen Music Festival, which I had another chance to. In those places, you could, if you had initiative, you could put an orchestra together and do all kinds of things because there was, you know, four or five orchestras in Aspen every summer there are. And so it just took some initiative to get people together to play. And they did.
So my next question I was going to ask is what prompted you to start the Golden Gate Symphony Orchestra? But it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like if you want to be a conductor, you need to get people to conduct.
Yes. You know, it's a nice concept of being in front of the mirror and wave your arms to a recording. But it doesn't really work when it comes to actually learning how to really conduct and the, you know, the deal with the people, deal with the issues, deal with the emotions. And so you definitely have to figure something out. And I, you know, coming from my background, being, you know, not having really the, I didn't start early to conduct. I started fairly late when I was already in my 20s. So that means that I needed to find my own way of doing it. And my own way, I realized quickly if I can, I'm good at getting people to play for me. So that is what I did. And when I came back to San Francisco, I had a guitar teaching job at a community music school called the Community Music Center, which I started in 84, which is in the Mission District. And they didn't have an orchestra. So I said, okay, very good. That's my first one. And at the same time, I got a job at a little a Catholic school, 7 a.m. kids orchestra. You know, from you know, where you had to do everything, tune the instrument, and I had to be there by sort of 5:30 in the morning, and a nun would give me advice on how to deal with everything. So, you know, you took whatever you could, and you know, I could in the city, I conducted whatever I could conduct just to get experience.
Wow, wow! So that's it. Sounds fascinating. And you started, when did you start that, the Golden Gate Symphony? When was that?
Well, the first incarnation was Community Music Center Orchestra. That's 89. I wrote like a kids opera, the second 7 years, a couple of years earlier, and did that in Switzerland in a little valley called Pregalia, where Giacometti is from, the big artist. I did this with a whole, with everybody in the valley basically participated, and it took me a few years to prepare it. But that also, at the same time, I founded the local professional orchestra in our state, in Graubünden. And so, you know, initiatives is really what it took. And same thing, I would come back to San Francisco and get together, you know, these people in the Mission on a Saturday afternoon, 1 to 4. Nobody wanted to come to the Mission. It was pretty crime ridden at that time, but slowly but surely, you know, people enjoyed what we were doing, and we, you know, and here we go. And of course, I was always interested in creating community. That's really what I'm a specialist in. That I love community. I live in San Francisco in the Mission, and I built an orchestra in the Mission, and so hence I have a huge community around me. You know, that's sort of my concept is to wherever you live, build something where you live, and you, it will work. You know, it wasn't very sexy in terms of being the famous conductors and doing the New York film, trying to have the big career, but very gratified when it comes to building a community around you.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, you know, I know one of my daughters is a teacher. She's a second grade teacher. Right. And it's not sexy being a teacher, all right? But the satisfaction that you get from, you know, watching kids grow, you know, teaching them and watching them grow, I'm assuming it's the same kind of gratification that you feel you know, taking kids and people and building, you know, building up their confidence, I assume, and building them up, you know, to become a unit, so to speak. All right. I mean, if that's what orchestras are all about. I mean, they're all about
taking courses, anything like that, you know. I mean, I also, what I really did, right, I have a lot of chorus experience, you know, with singing with my family all the time and then singing in the choruses and so on in my youth. But, and so I did that at the same time. I would also, I directed the San Francisco Children's Chorus in the same period. And then I got a job in a performing arts school for 20 years where I taught kids from 4 to 14. 5 days a week, which was incredible because you could really do something and build something amazing. So All at the same time as we built the Golden Gate Symphony, I did in 94, I started the San Francisco Sinfonietta, which was the professional arm of the Golden Gate Symphony today. And then the Community Music Center obviously was amateurs. And then 2010, I merged the whole thing together into the Golden Gate Symphony.
Oh, wow. Let me take you back a little bit, because I think, you know, we had a discussion before we got on the show. And you mentioned to me about your, you know, when you were growing up that you, again, your bios is 9 siblings. That's a lot of kids. And you also mentioned to me that you weren't exactly very well off. As a matter of fact, you grew up very poor. And I'm wondering, what was that like? And, you know, what kind of how did that affect you, and how did that help you or hurt you in your pursuit of your career?
Well, I would say we had some years of doing pretty good. My parents built a travel business with buses, and they had the first taxis, and they were innovative, very innovative people. And my mom was the first woman who had a driver's license in our state. So, and in fact, when she got the license, they called the police and said, a woman is driving. So it was pretty amazing. And that was not, you know, that was probably 48 or something, you know.
Wow. And that was in Switzerland?
Yeah, that was in the Swiss, in Chur, in that town I grew up.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had a very slow process. We built a business, state built the business in the 50s and early 60s. And of course, there was not much money around. But in the other hand, we had a very, you know, we lived in an apartment of 3 bedrooms with 11 people. But at the same time, we lived right next in this apartment building, 10 families right next to the forest. Great location overlooking the city, and you had the forest right next to you. So you had this extended living room, which my mom extensively used to send us out there and do whatever we wanted to do. And so, yes, we learned how to not have money. We learned how to work early. You know, we all had to get jobs, little jobs after school, before school, and in the summertime. And so you always knew that money is something you cannot, you have to really work on that, you know.
And it's so funny, because I think that is something that today's youth do not understand. Okay, what do you mean I have to work for a living? I'm going to school, or you know, I'm doing this, or I'm going out with my friends, whatever. And they don't understand what it means to grow up without money.
Well, particularly, I would say, particularly in places like San Francisco and the Swiss, it's today in Switzerland, people are well off. And but when I look, you know, we support programs in Nicaragua still today, 4 music schools now, and the kids down there, they all have to work. There is no money. There is real poverty. So you see that what happens there, but it doesn't. And here, of course, it happens in certain communities where people also don't have any money. But nevertheless, overall, I would say we were blessed, actually, that we had this experience, because we learned that things are not always like the bricks happen fairly often, you know, which you were just mentioning. So,
right. So,
oh, sorry.
While pursuing all these dreams of yours and, you know, trying to get all this stuff done, did you ever fall to a point so low that you said to yourself, you know what, I quit. I can't do this anymore. I can't deal with whatever's going on. You know, I'm giving up my dreams. I don't care. You know, I'm going to call, you know, roll up into a little ball, you know, and sleep the rest of my life away. I mean, did anything like that ever happen? And if it did, how did you manage to get out of that? And how did you make that comeback?
Well, I think in my case, because, you know, I got my first music job when I was about 16 and a half. I was hired as a guitar teacher in a music school in Switzerland. For me, that was an amazing success, actually, because suddenly I made about $17 an hour, which is probably around $48 or $45 today. And suddenly I made a living doing plucking this guitar, you know, it's like unbelievable. And so actually I had a different experience in that sense, because I quickly learned to make a living and made a living in music since then. And but what, of course, when you start going to conservatories and you go to the higher level of education, you're basically, these places are not places for community music. These places, you're supposed to be coming out of the conservatory and become, you know, in the conducting world, either have a big career, you know, touring or whatever, and or in the conducting world, you're supposed to have become an assistant conductor of a big orchestra, and then you have that crazy route. Well, that crazy route was not happening. You know, in my case, this is not happening. You know, I was already about 5 years too old in that whole scheme of things. I guess if I would have been, you know, 22 and graduating and with conducting, and then maybe I would have had a chance to get into some bigger orchestra as an assistant. But I was too old. I was already 27 when I finished my degree at the conservatory, because I started this whole education thing a bit later, because I was a maverick of doing music, learning it, and being a professional before I actually had my formal education. So that's the part I had to learn, that, you know, I had to remember what was important to me. I had to remember that community is what I want to do. You know, I was fun to go and take the classes with Previn and Bernstein and those big people and go to the classes with Karajan in Berlin. I felt good about that. But the point was that's not how the world works right now. The world works when you have to be young. And you have to have the right doors open. Everything is about somebody has to open that door for you. So I learned that pretty quick, that the doors are not quite open for me. But I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to go and do my thing. And so I started this little orchestra. It was really horrible. It was horrendously bad. In fact, my wife, Kate, and her friend, TJ, came to the first show when they met me. Not TJ, he's her girlfriend, Betsy. And they walked, Betsy wanted to walk out in the intermission, said, "This is horrible. I don't know what am I doing here." And Kate said, "Okay, no, we'll stay to the end." And in this case, we always had two shows. And then Kate told me after the show, that's, you know, how horrible it was. And I said, "Okay, well, come back tomorrow." And she said, "Well, you're crazy, come back tomorrow." That's insane. I'm not going to do that. So we said, okay, if you're not coming back tomorrow, we don't ever live together. I'm going to dump you like a hot potato. That's it. So she came tomorrow and experienced a transformation, because when you work on the edge of life, you know, classical music is really difficult, you know, really difficult. You can either be Beethoven, whatever, or you can also screw it up. Everybody knows this music being beautiful. Well, this music can also be really badly executed. So in this case, but people want to play it. So we would play little excerpts of symphonies, but still you need the violins to be in tune and the But they're not quite there yet. And in music, when you're not quite in tune, it's a horrendous oral experience. So anyway, and so that's, and she came back, and the next day would always be quite a bit better than the first day. Because the first day would be all nervous and people would, you know, freak out and have anxiety attacks and stuff like that. And then the second day was a little more respectable. And she did see that, oh, I get that. I understand that's, you know, and many, you know, you say, I'm a conductor. Well, that means in everybody's mind that I conduct, you know, I'm good. You know, I play the part. I got the long hair and the hat and the glasses. So, you know, and I had that then too when I was young. I was a good looking guy and had lots of spirit. And so people thought that I was definitely a, you know, major conductor somehow, you know. But, you know, also because I did all these things, I wrote my own operas and I got professionals together to play with me. And then in 94, I formed that chamber orchestra called San Francisco Sinfonietta. And so pretty quick, I realized I need to marry amateurs with professionals. You know, that would be the best if I can find a way to do that. And that's what we are. We have probably 25 professionals in their sections, and they coach the amateurs. And so the level is pretty damn good. And now we can have a very respectable, you know, it's good. It's, wow. It's inspiring.
Wow. It certainly is inspiring. It really is, to come from like nothing and nowhere and then just to, you know, to accomplish all the things that you've accomplished. It's just absolutely amazing. Let me ask you this. Who is the one person that you would point to that you would say had the most influence in your life, in your career?
Well, in my career, definitely there is a gentleman named James Weimer. And James was an education guru type of guy. He was in New York working for the Juilliard School in the prep department. So he had some really amazing students there, but he was just really good educator. But he also was a total drunk. So he never got up to the top of the school because of that. And at some point he moved to the Castro in San Francisco. He was also gay. And he moved to the Castro in San Francisco and started teaching at the prep at conservatory where I met him. And he had always these people come back to him, these really very gifted, like Yo-Yo Ma would come back to him and take some lessons. And
really?
Even out where he's already famous, and a whole bunch of other conductors who made it would come to clean up their ears every year, you know, stuff like that, to get a shot in the arm, because conducting is a high-pressure profession. You need to have your team around you to keep your ears in order. You know, it's like, if you don't have your ears, you're screwed, you know. So anyway, so this guy was really good at it. And when I graduated, I knew I had holes in my, you know, hearing everything, the whole orchestra, the chorus and all that in front of me. So I went to him and said, I need you to help me out. And he said, okay, come to my house. And I went there at 9 a.m. And it took a whole week, a whole full week. He worked with me the whole day, whatever, with all these exercises he went through. He didn't say much about anything. And I answered whatever I thought it was right or wrong. And after a week, he said to me, well, I'll take you. You might have something. And he told me then and there, said, you will never make it until you're in your 60s. And I was really mad at him. You know? I was 26 or something at the time, or 28. And, you know, but the point is, that's what it took for me to become, to put my level up to an international level, to something where I can go in front of anyone and do this thing. And he did. I did 5 years with him, and really made every difference in the world. The confidence was there and the possibility. So he was definitely, from a musical perspective, by far the most influential for me.
Wow. So, you know, this is a common theme throughout my shows. Every guest that I talk to and I ask them that kind of a question, like who is responsible or who, you know, who is important in your life, everybody, to a man, to a woman, they all point to the same thing. They had a mentor.
Yeah,
they had a mentor. And it's so important in life.
And I've something I gave back, you know. I have tons of students around all over the place where I still mentor them now. They're older and they, you know, try to get their careers going.
Well, that's what happens when you get to our age. Okay, right. What do? You mentor the younger people. You try and help them. You know, you give back.
That's the opportunity you give people. You know, you give me a platform to talk to a lot of people about what I did and how I handle my things. So that's another platform we all need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let me just ask you this. Do you have any words of wisdom or anything you'd like to share with my audience before we go? You know, go for it.
Yeah, I think if anything, right now what I'm teaching my younger students, in fact, I'm doing a residency program next year with lots of young people. Every single set we have, we invite people to stay with us for a month and we give them the opportunity to look into our world and actually help them to open doors for their careers. With the idea is you need to look around for your team. Check out your team. Don't be afraid. Ask all your professors. Ask anyone. If you ask a specialist or knows about money, because you need to learn how to fundraise. So, you know, you're not going to make it as a conductor if you don't know how to fundraise. It's impossible. So the point is, but if you're young, remember you need to create a team around yourself. Like you have the parents who keep supporting you or whoever is supporting you to go to school, to study, you have that privilege. But you got to go beyond that, you see? And you have to be humble and say, okay, if I want to be successful, I need a serious team around me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you so, so much. Let me ask you this, last but not least. So if people want to get in touch with you, all right, whether it's for advice, whether it's to work with you, whatever it is, what would be the best way for them to do that? Do you have like a website?
Or www.goldengatesymphony.org.
GoldenGateSymphony.org, one word, yeah. Right?
And they can find me there, and I'm always open to, I also do Zoom session, I do lots of consultations with those type of things, and people call me and want professional advice, and I do that regularly.
Wow.
So, and anybody needs help, get in touch with me.
There you go. Once again, www.goldengatesymphony.org, .com, .org.
Yes.
Okay. If you want to get in touch with Urs, you have questions, you want to schmooze, you want to shoot the breeze.
Yeah, I'm encouraging the schmoozing because I'm encouraging people not to be afraid to get in touch. Whether you're looking for a solo gig, whether you're looking for a conducting opportunity, whether you're looking for an opportunity to send me a composition, do not hesitate to get in touch with me because that's what we need and that's what we do. We are in that business.
That's great. Thank you so much, Urs. Thanks so much for sharing your story with me and my audience. Good luck going forward. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Shomron. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams.
If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Shomron shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.